Welcome to the Body Bag Podcast. I'm your host, Broke Rider Dave. With me, as always, Chris Thomas.
What's good, everybody?
And today we have a special guest coming back after about a year and a half ago you were on.
It was during Halloween Ends.
Yeah, incredible author, Davide Terestino.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Very, very well.
Doing well. Thank you for coming back on, man.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
So how has the reception been since Tooth Fairy?
The Tooth Fairy is going well. I mean, of course, I think at this point it has peaked a little bit as far as general numbers. So it was a great time for me to write a new book, which debuted in September 2023, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about today with you guys. But the Tooth Fairy has been good. I keep getting pretty good reviews. Some really good, very few bad. I mean, I have to account for those as well.
Right.
But overall, I'm really, really satisfied with that book for sure.
And we got good receptions when we gave it away during the book giveaways. We had people responding saying how much they enjoyed it.
That's always great to hear.
Yeah, I think The Tooth Fairy is probably one of my favorite reads of last year.
That means a lot.
Yeah, and I think it was a really good story all the way through. Because a lot of times I don't have time to like fully go back and finish stories when we have guests on. But The Tooth Fairy had me so hooked in that as soon as we finished recording last time, I went and finished it.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it means a lot coming from you, Dave.
Thank you. Yeah.
Glowing endorsement coming from Dave over here, from Broke Rider Dave.
Yeah, but picking up Hollow, I realize you are really good at getting someone hooked in from the get-go. Like, that was one of my favorite things about Tooth Fairy was the opening chapter where you started in the middle. And this one, you didn't start from the middle, but you had such an interesting opening chapter where you're forced to keep reading it because you need to know what happened to the characters that were found in the opening chapter.
Yeah. I mean, the hook of whatever story is, you know, clearly a very important part of every book. I mean, I try to do it in a balanced way because, you know, if you overdo it, it's very evident to the reader what you're trying to do. So it's a little bit tricky, you know, to find that balance. But I'm glad to hear that Hollow for you was as intriguing from the get-go as the Tooth Fairy was.
Do you find that to be hard when you're writing to scale it back a little bit and not try to put too much into it to the point where it feels gimmicky?
Honestly, I don't think about it too much. It comes quite natural. And also, it's something that I actually decide more in the editing process rather than in the first draft. Because
okay,
but I write the first draft, right? I have this scheme and this chronological sequence in my mind. But then during the editing phase, there is always the question, who would this like chapter, you know, be better at the beginning of the story? Can I move things around?
Right.
And that's how, whenever I wrote the story, the first chapter wasn't actually the first one that I wrote. So that helps me a little bit. When I write, I never plot. So I just have these crazy ideas and, you know, the story just
makes itself.
In my mind.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so at some point when I'm editing and when I'm like evaluating the hook of the story, I always ask myself, is that hook strong enough? Can I do better? Can I move there another scene? Or can I remove a scene, you know, and place it somewhere else? That's how it usually works for me. But it works differently for every writer, I guess.
Yeah, that's why I like doing these interviews. Hearing people's processes, you'll have people who take strict notes and then you have others who just wing it. And just, I don't really think about it. I just start writing and just starts, it just pours out.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, that's one of the greatest lessons by Stephen King. I don't know if you guys have read his only nonfiction work, which is On Writing.
I own the book.
Yeah. So that book, one of the greatest things that I've learned from that book is if you want to write a book, write first and edit later.
Right.
You just got to let the story out as quickly as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to avoid, you know, the procrastination and the perfectionism of self-editing yourself all the time. So otherwise, the story changes too much in your mind compared to when you first thought about it. So it's a concept that I always, you know, loved, and I just try to follow that rule of thumb.
Okay, yeah.
That's actually what they say to do in writing exercises for beginning writers anyway, is to just not think, just put your ideas on paper. You can always take things away or add to it later.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet I still never follow the rule and I still criticize myself and I never get anything done.
I think we all do in some capacity.
Yeah. I think it's one of those vulnerable things where it's just like it could be kind of scary to put your work out there for the world to see, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
It is a very private thing that you're, showing to the world. So I totally understand all the fears, and I think this. I mean, I don't want to get on a tangent, but I also think this is very rooted into our society and how it, part of it is also, capitalism in itself. Because when we write, we already think about the book as a product, like something that other people need to buy or need to, or that we need to sell. But the reality of it is that what comes out of your writing is art in whatever form. Art is messy. And I love that. I love my art when it's messy. Then, of course, you need to polish it. You need to make it a book. But I think without that first messy part, I wouldn't be as fun, if it makes any sense.
That's a really interesting thing to think about, of like where art and capitalism meets. Like you want people to see what you have to offer, but at the same time, money needs to be involved. How are you going to get it out to people? And it's but Dave, you said you've already begun Hollow, correct?
I'm about 90 pages into Hollow. Like I said, opening chapter hooks you in just like the Tooth Fairy, but they're very different stories.
Do you
I would
find
agree
it
with that.
easy to change gears like that? Like you've spent so much time in one setting, now I'm going to change gears and do something different.
Yes and no. Yes, because it's always difficult when you find like a spot that works for you to get out of that comfort zone. But at the same time, no, because I really like to explore. And while the Tooth Fairy was like a real life horror story, with no paranormal or supernatural element, I've always been drawn to stories of demonic possessions, paranormal, just like these demons that manifest in our life, and they are connected to our feelings and our fears. So in some ways, even if the Tooth Fairy was a result of let's say of an illness, right? Of mental illness, it's still the result of a fear. It's still like a demon that haunts you on the inside. And this time I wanted to explore this from a more supernatural perspective.
So when you began writing Hollow, what was like your inspiration that originally like sparked the idea for this story?
Okay, so this is a very good question, also a very personal one, because ultimately I think Hollow was a lot more difficult for me to write, not from a technical point of view, but from an introspective point of view, because I always think that what scares me is going to scare other people. That's generally what my philosophy when I write about horror. And so one of the things that I'm really scared about, and I think, not only me, but a lot of people, is just the fear of grief. The fear of grief is sometimes worse than the grief itself, if that makes any sense.
I understand completely what you're talking about. As somebody who's, I've been to a number of funerals as a plus one. I've never been to one for somebody who's died in my family or friends. And I am terrified of the idea of when that has to happen sometime.
It's the worst.
I don't know how I'm going to be when I'm in that level of grief.
Yeah, and I think we all ask ourselves that question, right? Like we all are kind of terrified by how it's gonna feel. And so that is one of those things that always haunts me. And so I wanted to let that out and write a story about the demon of grief. And the Hollow is the demon of grief in the book. It is another thing that I wanted to really do is to explore the concept of grief from many cultural perspectives. So there is, let's say, the Western world perspective of how we grieve, right? Like someone that we love dies, and we have maybe, I don't know, 1, 2 days off at work, and then we are back at it. You never really have any time to process that loss. And on the opposite side, in the book, you will probably find that there are other cultures that approach this in such a different way. And one of the angles that I really wanted to explore and research was the angle from the Native American perspective. And so the Hollow is a category of demons that basically feed off grief or the fear of grief and any other negative emotion that is connected to that.
Like a dementor. No, that's pretty cool. I like that concept. I like the concept of taking a feeling like grief or a feeling like anger and personifying it into an actual creature.
It is sort of like a lot of people that read Hollow went back to me and say and said this is like the Exorcist meeting the Outsider, if it makes sense. Like the Outsider book from Stephen King, it is also about a demon that basically is feeding off negative emotions. Stephen King literature is full of that concept
It's
through Dark Tower.
littered like in a lot like right now I'm re-listening to the audiobook of Green Mile, and even in that story he talks about a entity that feeds off of negative energy and feeds off of angst and grief and whatnot.
It's a very common theme in his work, even in the Dark Tower, for example. I remember there was there are these demons in the Stephen King multiverse, like Pennywise or like Dandelo on the other side, for example,
Langoliers? Oh
Dandelion.
no, Langoliers is something different.
I remember Dandelo specifically because that's a demon that feeds off like laughters. So people laughing give him energy. And so there are these, let's say, very interesting creatures in his multiverse. And I just wanted to create one of my own, which was more connected to the Native American culture.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Real quick, you said you wanted to create your own creatures. Is this book going to be the start of a universe of different kind of creatures? Is Tarsitano going to start making his own universe with creatures? A connected
Oh, that
universe,
would be so
perhaps?
cool. That would be so cool. I think in every writer's mind, there is that fantasy about having sort of basically a container of all your stories, which just connects some dots between stories. I honestly didn't think about how to develop this. I just wanted to start with the first one, but why not? It's a very interesting concept to have multiple of these entities in multiple stories, and maybe only people that have read all my books will understand that connection. I love that.
And it doesn't hurt. You could always just leave the door open and if you want to like if you want to re-explore some familiar territory.
Doesn't need to be decided now.
So like I said, you're exploring like grief and the hollow. Do you already know what you're gonna start working on next, or?
I actually, yes. So I have a couple of projects in the drawers right now. I haven't quite decided which one is going to be developed into my next published work, but I have an idea for a dystopian story, which is a little bit of a tangent of my what I've wrote so far. But again, I love to explore and I love dystopian, and I love dystopian with horror elements. And on the other side, I have a few short stories that I've wrote in the years, which basically I want to connect all of them to you guys know that I'm from Italy. I'm from a region called Calabria on the southern part of Italy. And I mean, that region, it's so ancient, it has so much history, and so it has so much folklore and so much legends and tales about evil. And so I was thinking about making this little tribute to my homeland and writing basically an anthology of short stories, which are all connected to Calabria. So
You think you
that's.
might go back, so you can like kind of be in the area to get inspiration?
Yes, actually, I go back there couple of times a year, and this last Christmas I went back, and I spent a little bit of time going around in these like very small villages, very ancient villages, talking with people. So yeah, I actually really enjoy that side of the research that comes, you know, before writing a story. So yeah, I started doing it. I want to do more. I don't know how long it will take before we see this book there, but I'm sure one day it will be out there.
Well, we're looking forward to that, definitely.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Like bringing like the Italian folklore over here. Because as much as like Italy is like romanticized in American culture, there's not much like literature, like movies that really go into like Italian folklore out here.
Like mythologies or.
Yes, if you think about it, like the southern part of Italy, I mean, there was a civilization, you know, with the Greeks, and that was like literally 3,000 years ago. So you can only imagine in 3,000 years of history how much folklore and how much, let's say, how many stories have been, let's say, told and developed around the concept of like what's good and what's evil. And that's what really interests me.
Yeah, I do love different mythologies and different takes on. That's all I would read back when I was in high school is just like different origin stories and how different cultures like have different stories. So that'll be, but Italian is not one that I'm very familiar with. So that'll be really cool.
So when it comes to Italy, like our we get focused on like the like more history side, so looking into like all the folklore and stuff. I'd probably read that as soon as you put it out.
I appreciate that. Hopefully one not too long. It won't take too long before that happens.
I do have one last question regarding Hollow. I'm looking at the cover art right now, and I gotta say, I really like the cover of this. It's I don't know. It invokes a feeling in me that's hard to explain, but it's dark and it's very ominous. How did you or the person that you hire for this, what was the collaboration like to come up with this cover art?
I'm really glad that you asked this question because I'm very, very fond of that cover. And you're not the first one mentioning it, which is, you know, a great compliment because we put so much effort into this cover. So the artist that actually designed my cover, his name is Ross. He lives in Australia.
Hey, Ross.
And he's
Hey, Ross,
the Ross of your listing. Thank you for that cover. But yeah, he's an extremely talented design. And the concept was basically I saw his portfolio, you know, his catalog of covers that he was exploring. So covers that hadn't been assigned yet. And I saw one that basically had all those, you know, all those like sort of like veins that are on the cover, and they almost like look like roots, like roots of a tree. And so at that time, I was really thinking about the Hollow as basically this creature that was living in the woods.
So it's like part of the woods. It's like he's part, like he has roots into like body and into, yeah.
Into the earth. Because the earth is also a very important concept for Native American culture. The land, so the soil, the earth, that is God for the Native American people. And so to me, that, you know, I was just immediately drawn to that concept. And then we developed it in the sense of I wanted those colors. I wanted this creature to blend into something that was let's say rooted into the earth. And I also wanted him upside down, which I think was a good call. I think if you look at it upside down, so if you look at it in the way he originally in the way I originally thought about it, I don't think it would make the same effect as the final cover. So we flipped it around
It gives
and
it a sense of like disorientation a little bit.
It's almost like as if the way I was picturing it was as if it was coming from the ceiling. Um, so that was my final touch and decision. But yeah, there were a lot of iterations that went into the cover. I also had a couple of ideas, which then I eliminated from the options because I don't know if you noticed, but Hollow has also a little bit of this true crime vibe.
That's what
And
I was kind of feeling when I was reading the synopsis of it. I was there's a lot of mystery surrounding like
yes,
this
and
stuff.
I really wanted this book to be a blend of true crime and horror and paranormal horror, just because true crime is another genre that I personally really, really enjoy reading, and so I wanted to give it a shot. So there are a few elements of a true crime story, even though the book is essentially a paranormal horror.
Hey, I love the blend.
Yeah, works well. So I'm just gonna ask, if this was gonna get made into a movie, who would you want at the helm directing it?
I love it when he asks that question. I always forget that he asks, and I'm always happy when you bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah, great question. So I think maybe this answer can lead us to the second part of our interview, but
Okay.
I think Ari Aster would be probably my pick for this one. And the reason why I say that is because Ari Aster work on around the paranormal and the demonic possession is absolutely terrifying to me. Even without, let's say, going into like jump scares and stuff like that, is just able to horrify people and disturb people, even without, any particular like gory scene. And I just love that kind of emotion that his movies transmit to me.
And he doesn't put out a whole lot of movies, so it looks like he does little passion projects, so you know he'll take his time with it.
Hopefully he's listening.
Yeah, hear us, Ari.
Oh, I don't know. I'm the biggest Ari Aster fan, so.
That would be utterly amazing if, oh, hey, well, you know, Will Perry was listening. We didn't know that. Maybe Ari's listening right now, and he's gonna contact us through Body Bag. We'll get you in touch with Davide, and we'll talk.
I don't know. He's about to hear me trash Hereditary, so.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you had to join us on. Well, but first off, before we move into the movie, the book coming out is Hollow, and that's coming out when, Davide?
Oh, it's already
It's
out.
already out, rather.
It came out on in September 2022.
That's what I meant to ask. When it came out. It came out in September, not when does it, when did it come out?
So everyone go on Amazon right now.
And
Stop what you're doing and buy this book. You
look out,
won't regret it.
actually. It may or may not end up in this upcoming book prize package. It is. It's gonna be in there. But yeah, that moves us right along into Hereditary, which you wanted to talk about Hereditary and just kind of a little bit of A24 just in general, which is fine with me. I'll talk about A24.
I mean, I think whenever you guys, I know that you guys like to talk about horror movies, and so whenever you guys ask me, I was immediately my answer was very, very quick because I had just rewatched maybe for the third time Hereditary, and it was just so surprising to me because it's one of those movies that I loved at first sight, but it's one of those movies where I also learn something new and some very small detail every time I watch it. And I mean, A24 horror, I mean, just to mention, I don't know, The Witch,
Oh my God, Dave, should I tell him?
Actors.
Like, I literally, that's
The
the
last episode we recorded was The Witch.
it was the first time I ever watched it. We were just talking about The Witch.
Eggers with The Witch, but even Aster again with Midsommar. It's just a new, I mean, new frontier of horror to me of our days.
With A24, like I do have like a love-hate relationship with their movies, but I always know they're gonna be filmed really well. You are gonna get a lot of incredible shots in their movies.
Cinematography is always going to be very good in an A24 movie.
Also, Talk to Me, to be honest, just watched it very recently. It's just like, it's just like right up my alley when it comes to horror movies. So I feel like Hereditary is one of those movies that is either loved or hated. And I always have big discussions with people that don't like this movie because I'm always like, you should rewatch it, give it another chance, because it's not one of those movies. It the first time you watch it, it almost looks like a movie that doesn't have a very strong story underneath. But as you rewatch it, as you give it that second chance, you will start connecting the dots, and it's just, I think it's a masterpiece.
I
In
mean, I
my humble
watched it for the
opinion.
second time, and I'm still kind of at the point where I'm like, I realized the first time I watched it and I hated it, I realized it was just overhyped to me, where everyone's like, this is the most terrifying movie of all time. And I'm just like, where?
That was kind of like when you recommended The Exorcist for me, is that sometimes when you go into a movie that is so hyped that you're expecting nothing but a masterpiece. So then you're going to be, like this episode is actually coming out during the month where we're actually going back and re-reviewing and giving second chances to some movies that we particular like one of my picks is The Lighthouse, another A24 movie. I watched it and I didn't care for it, but I really, really want to. So I'm gonna re-watch it on my own, having it been years later, and see if I can appreciate it a little bit more.
I mean, to me, Hereditary was exactly that kind of movie, even though I'm, among those that loved it at first sight. It's just, I mean, I guess the thing that I loved about the movie is how the movie just starts as basically the description of a tragedy. Like, it's that whole family is just like, seems like it's doomed by something that it's not very clear, and all sort of bad things happen to them. And then the movie literally just shifts gears in the last maybe 30 minutes, and it becomes this like paranormal nightmare where, there is like all this pagan and, let's say, worship of Satan, or not
Pagan
exactly
devils,
Satan, but pagan,
yeah,
yes,
one of the
devil.
kings of hell, yeah.
And I mean, that was like, for the last 30 minutes of the movie, I was like, what the hell? In a good way.
Like, I also feel like the pacing of the movie is weird, because it starts off slow, and then the daughter's decapitated, and you think it's about to pick up, and then it slows down again to ramp up for the last 30 minutes again. I just feel like it's an odd pacing for a movie that also kind of takes me out of it, if that makes sense.
I get that. The pace is weird. It's not constant.
Well, yeah, A24, you're gonna like, if you watch A24, it's you're not gonna get your fast pace stuff. You watch A24 knowing, all right, this is gonna be a observe the surroundings. There's gonna be like layers to this kind of thing. It's like I felt that way with The Witch. Like when I watched The Witch, and it's The Witch is a it's slow, but it's not. But yeah, but with Hereditary, it's I do feel bad with this episode because we spent a lot of time shitting on Hereditary.
I'm just not a fan of it, yeah. I always find it a tough watch, yeah.
But you said that this and like other things kind of influenced your writing. What's kind of some of the stuff that you that kind of spoke to you in terms of like, oh, I kind of want to have something like this in the story.
It's really the thing that really draws me from specifically from Hereditary is just the concept of evil things impacting regular people life in a way that initially it's not very clear. Like, for example, in the case of Hereditary, the let's say the demon, the entity, I think the name was Paimon.
Paimon,
So King Paimon,
Paimon is like looking for this body, right? Like for this vessel.
this vessel, yeah.
And it's basically researching this vessel only into this bloodline of this specific Graham family, right? And so you have the grandma, and then you have Annie, which, by the way, Toni Collette interpretation in Hereditary to me is, I mean, it still gives me the
Oh,
chills.
we love
Yeah,
Toni. We love Toni Collette on the
as much
show.
as I don't like this movie, Toni Collette absolutely killed it.
Oh my God, it was so good. And then Charlie, right? And so you You almost think like, okay, so this demon is like looking like there is a connection between, let's say, the female gender in this family and the demon. But then ultimately he ends up into a male body vessel. And that's where I think the movie leaves you with some questions. And I just love when a movie leaves you with some questions, like not a lot of them. That's a confusing movie. But not a movie that necessarily explains all everything, right? There is
Yeah, I feel like if
something.
a movie like over explains everything, you kind of just leave like, oh, that's so cool.
I don't like having my hand held through a movie. Like I like at the end, like I sometimes there doesn't need to be a resolution at the end.
Then another thing that I always ask myself about this movie is what's up with the heads? Because if you think about it, there is the, I mean, Charlie clearly is decapitated. Annie kills herself, literally sewing her own head off.
Sawing her own head off.
With a, what was that, a garrote? Is that what she had? Like a,
It was like a wire, like a
yeah,
steel
like a,
wire.
like,
Wire cutter, yeah.
yeah, like a wire garrote kind of thing.
And then there is the bird, right? And Charlie literally like
Cuts head off, yeah.
with scissors, like he just cuts the head off. So that kind of symbolism around that, it's one of those things that is unanswered.
You could
I
just
just
draw your
like
own con draw your own conclusions as to what that means.
Open to interpretation, yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, there is. I mean, other than the obvious head decapitation scene, like there is a lot
But that's
of.
those kind of things. The more you watch that movie, the more you will pick up little things. The one other which I was really shocked when I realized that that was happening, and that was on my third time I watched it, is that I apparently, and maybe a lot of people miss that, but Annie, she had a brother, and the brother committed suicide, and so
She's
my
committed
ver
suicide.
No, her brother committed suicide.
yeah, it was a
Annie's brother,
guy.
yeah.
And so one thing that I thought about is, oh, okay, so maybe what if Paimon was actually, inside the brother? So what if actually he was looking for a male vessel from the very beginning? And so, even during the story, Annie explains that she wanted to keep Peter, her first son, away from her mother. And that's maybe why, the demon was into Charlie and not into Peter to start with. So it's all that family dynamic where the grandma is re literally the queen of this cult, and all she's trying to do is to give Paimon a body inside her bloodline.
Now you said that Annie is Toni Collette's character, right?
Yes.
You said that her brother committed suicide.
If I don't remember wrongly, yes.
I'm saying eventually
It's
she
never like,
did.
it's never seen or anything. It's like a throwaway line while she's in therapy. She's like, my
Exactly.
brother
It's
killed
just a line.
himself. Yeah.
I know, but I'm saying eventually she ended up, she was possessed or whatever, but she ended up killing herself.
Yes.
That's what
That's true.
I was adding to it. There's like, sure, her brother
Oh,
killed
okay.
herself, and then she ended up killing herself as well with the garrote.
Gotcha. But yeah, so all these little questions and all these little details, is what makes me think that there is more to the story that maybe I just didn't get the first time.
Dave, you just don't want to admit you're wrong. You just don't want to admit you're
Hey,
wrong and that this is a masterpiece.
when it comes to movies, it's all about opinions. Sometimes my
Yours is
opinions are
just
good,
wrong.
sometimes they're bad.
I'm hoping that I have that kind of eye-opening thing when we watch Lighthouse. But
I gotta say, I feel really bad for the father of the family. Like, he didn't have shit to do with anything. He had to deal with his wife losing her shit, his daughter dying, and then he just gets lit on fire.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I have this playing right now in the background as we're recording that we're just about to get the scene where Toni Collette's about to have a mental breakdown at dinner.
Oh, that scene is so good.
It's one of the scenes again. More praise to Toni Collette. She's definitely my favorite part of the movie, is in terms of like she's just kills, as Dave said, kills it in this role. A lot of good acting done with her face, even if when she's not saying anything.
Very expressive. I definitely think that the movie without her would have been a lot weaker than what it is.
Or like the scene where she's like losing her mind, like where she discovers Charlie in the back of the car,
that in
and you just hear her losing her mind while it's focused on Peter in bed.
I'm Peter. Oh, that yeah, that is
That's such a killer scene, yeah.
that is why Ari Aster to me would be my first pick as a director, because to show that scene from that perspective is even more terrifying
That was a
than.
brilliantly shot scene. Of I will say that, but it I might be going to hell, but I laughed my ass off at that scene just because it I just I'm putting myself in that poor mother's position. She's getting ready to go to work. She doesn't have she has no reason to think that anything is wrong. She you know she, the thing that's probably on her mind is, oh, man, I got to get to work and take care of these files. And then to just get in the car and then
It's absurd.
I
Your
don't know.
daughter's headless body's just in the back seat.
Like just the one thing you would never expect to see when you get into your car, and I don't know why I'm probably gonna go to hell, but I just laughed when I said, because it was just that's it's kind of that same laughter when you see Ash at the end of Evil Dead and he's just getting put through the ringer. It's just like this poor person.
Uncomfortable laughter, yeah. But yeah, like I don't like his movies. Like I don't like Midsommar either, but Ari Aster is a good director. Like cinematography wise, he does really good. He has a lot of really good choices. It's just his movies I haven't been able to get into.
That's why I'm glad that we're reviewing it in season six, just because, like,
In his
we.
defense, I would also say that I think, if I'm not wrong, Hereditary was probably his first horror movie.
I think so.
I might be wrong. I don't know.
I could double check that, but I'm pretty sure you're right.
He doesn't have a lot. He doesn't have a huge roster.
He did like a lot of short films, and then he did a Hereditary, Midsommar, and then Beau Is Afraid.
Now, I heard mixed things on Beau's Afraid.
It's a weird one, but also another thing with his movies is they're all so long. Like I
Well,
think Beau Is Afraid is close to like 3 hours long.
Hereditary is 2 hours and some change. Midsommar is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
And Beau Is Afraid is 2 hours and 59 minutes.
So, yeah, I mean, I can understand if you like have if you're not really into like longer type movies. They're longer and they tend to be a little bit slower and not in your face, but if you I've been in the mood for movies like that. You just got to catch it on the right mood. And I think I just probably appreciate A24 a little bit more now that some years, because this was like the earlier years of A24. I think maybe when they first came on the scene, they probably just, to everybody, just seemed a little too weird. And that's the reason why they probably took a little bit of time for them. But now, people love A24 now.
I think it was the thing that always that I always liked about A24 horror specifically was that it was such a big change from the horror scene, let's say in back in those days. It was just like such a like just like a new frontier, honestly, of horror.
Oh yeah, I welcome it. Like just I was just telling him, like, I will take a very weird script that you're gonna take a chance on and it flop than a big budget generic script. I'm glad that they take these weird. It's kind of like I always compare A24 with M. Night Shyamalan because I think they would be right at home together.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just they'll take. Hey, say what you want about M. Night, and we have. He takes
He takes a
non-generic
lot of
script.
risk, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I respect both company and him. So,
And like
what do you guys
A24,
think
like when
about?
they did elevated slashers too.
Yeah, what do you guys think about X and Pearl by A24?
X is probably, like I said, Christopher, so X is probably my favorite A24 film. I don't know why I haven't watched Pearl yet. Like, I know I'm gonna enjoy it. I just haven't gotten around to sit down and watch it. But yeah, X by far is probably my favorite A24 film.
Is it because it gives you that kind of like slasher feel, like 70s slasher kind of vibe?
Yeah, because that's kind of what got me into horror was slasher movies.
But like 70s, 80s era slasher.
And they take that like a very simple concept that a lot of people mess up, and they elevate it to tell a good story with it, with good character development. Like, and they make it seem like it's not slow paced, even though the first kill doesn't happen till like you're 45, 50 minutes into the movie.
It's a lot of mood setup. setting the tone and said, like, these are your characters, and that movie was fun. I really enjoyed that movie.
It's a lot of fun.
But would you say that Hereditary is probably your favorite A24 movie, period?
Yes, hands
Yeah,
down.
hands down.
Yeah, to me, yes.
And I think this was relatively in the early years. I think this probably was the big movie that started making A24 get some traction.
Yes, I think so.
Because I, despite my opinion of it, when it came out, everybody was talking about it.
I want to watch the Iron Claw that just came out for A24.
The Zac Efron wrestling movie.
Yeah, being a huge pro wrestling fan, I was like, I think I'd enjoy that, but
And now they're delving into other than horror. Or have they always been like.
I think they were, I
Yeah,
think they were a
always.
lot more into horror at the very beginning, and now they're branching out in different things.
Now that they're becoming a little bit more mainstream, they're branching out to do different types of
I think so. Even The Lighthouse, if you, I mean, that was very Lovecraftian kind of horror. Like I feel like they were, I wouldn't say 100%, but maybe 90% horror dominated back when they became really, really popular.
Well, I feel like they've always been doing like different artistic movies because they did like Spring Breakers in 2013.
Was that the what's her name? Selena Gomez movie?
Yeah, I think Selena Gomez did it. Yeah.
James Franco.
Yeah. So they always taken like weird
But they usually kind of
script.
stuck in the
Yeah.
horror genre. But I mean, they've always
Yeah.
been weird. I mean, they did Swiss Army Man with Daniel Radcliffe, and that's not a horror movie at all.
Yeah.
Which, if you haven't seen that, Dave, please do yourself a favor and watch Swiss Army Man.
Said Swiss Army Man.
Swiss Army Man. I can hear Davide giggling over there. I'm guessing he's probably seen it.
I actually have not, but I was giggling because it's actually on my list.
It's goofy. It's not a horror, and it is a it's goofy. I'll just say that. You
It's
might
goofy.
it's goofy. You might watch it and go, "This is dumb." But I don't know. It puts a smile on my face. Maybe it's just because it's happening to Daniel Radcliffe.
Like I'm on A24films.com right now and looking at like some of the stills from Swiss Army Man, and they're all just Daniel Radcliffe looking dumb.
Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse.
Okay,
I'm just gonna say that he plays a corpse, but yes, he does talk too. That's A24 for you. As we're kind of like going into our like last bit of time here, is anything slated this year for A24 that's that has you excited, or Ari Aster for that matter?
Actually, there is one in, I'm not sure exactly if it's 2024 or 2025, but there's going to be this movie called Civil War, which
That's supposed to be
sounds
this year.
incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, this year, yeah. I think it's toward the end of this year or something like that,
That's
but that one
A24.
got me really, really, that's A24.
Yeah, it's coming out spring 2024. Yeah.
I don't know,
So that's
man.
what.
The only thing I keep thinking about when I see this is because it's all about like political refugees and it's obvious, it's obviously timely for, the era that we're in right now, but all I just keep thinking of is, it is an election year coming up. Maybe we can wait a year before this comes out, or maybe a year
Maybe
after.
let's watch it in 2025.
Yeah,
But definitely,
maybe.
what got me interested was just the fact that you have this, very polarized. It's just the call of the dystopian that is in myself. And so, looking at those like scenarios of like civil war in America, almost 200 years after the last one, it's fascinating, and it's something that I don't think A24 has ever explored yet. So I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, my thing is, so they're doing a Civil War movie, and they got like, in it, they kind of showed like it's gonna be like the Republic of Texas working with the Republic of California. I'm like, those are the two most politically opposite states you could think
Yeah,
of. They would
California
not
is
work
usually,
together, and
Cali is usually blue, isn't it? And
super like liberal, and then Texas is
Texas
super
red.
Republican. Yeah, I
But
was like, yeah, those don't go together.
that's why I'm thinking, this would be best for 2025. We're already at each other's throats here in America. Can we just like not have this like stoke the fire movie come
Let's
out
not pour
until?
gasoline on the fire.
Can we just not put gasoline on this, please? I'm just trying to I'm just trying to,
Relax
be civil with my neighbor. But I think maybe that's another reason why A24 I'm liking a little bit more as I see it get traction, is because it's, I think that's the thing why people think A24 movies are scary, is that they take these things, you have like witches in The Witch, you have like satanic cults in this one, but it's filmed and told in such a way that it feels like it's rooted in reality.
Yes, I couldn't have put it in better words. That is one of the elements that really, that I really like about this production house. It's exactly what you just said. They want to tell like ordinary real life stories, but to touch topics that are, weird and evil.
Which is why I think it's that, I think I just had that kind of thought as I was sitting here watching this, like, all right, I'm watching this movie about a pagan cult, and last night I was watching about a witch and stuff like that, but it doesn't, there's no like hocus pocus lasers, like there's no like demonic hellfire coming out, it's all like happening but like based in a realistic kind of feeling setting, like that witch in the thing. That was like a legit, like that was just she wasn't, yeah, she wasn't like on a broomstick casting spells, but she's out there.
That's not how you picture a witch, isn't it? It's
I think that's why I, that's where my appreciation for May 24 comes from, is
I
it's
couldn't agree more.
like my introduction to A24 was The Green Room, which is purely based in reality. Like getting stuck in a green room, being surrounded by neo-Nazis that want to kill you.
Being surrounded by Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart playing a neo-Nazi.
That was strange. I'm glad that we had this opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about not just Hereditary, but A24 in general. Just 'cause it's been a long time coming, just because we talk about A24. Well, we usually go on our own tangents whenever we bring up A24. It's like we don't want to seem like we're haters, because we do appreciate it, but it's like,
We do like most of their movies,
but I'm open to trying to give Hereditary an extra chance to peel back the layers.
Let me know. Let me know if something changes, and if it doesn't, it's totally fine. I mean,
Okay. No,
it
I'm gonna message you like in a day or two from
is
now. Like, nope, you're wrong. The other day, it's garbage. No,
it's
but
still garbage.
it's still garbage. No, it's honestly, I'm willing to. It's happened before where we've gone back. We used to be Venom. Venom used to be a movie that we watched and just completely trashed, and it used to be a punching bag. But then we rewatched it. Oh, not the superhero one, by the way. This is a different Venom movie from like the 90s. And we rewatched it and was like, you know what? It's bad, but it ain't the dumpster fire that we said it was back in season one. You're just trying to sound like edgy or something.
I just realized the new Nosferatu movie is an A24.
Oh yeah, it's Robert Eggers, so of course it's gonna be A24.
No, it's not A24. I just saw it wasn't.
Oh, I thought it was obviously A24. I thought it
That's
was.
why I thought it was A24, but no, it's not. It's a Studio 8, which I don't think I've heard of.
Studio 8's put out a few. I can't name off the top of my head, but I've definitely.
Alpha, White Boy Rick, Air and Hypnotic.
So I'm going to go ahead and forego the rating on this one, because it's obvious that it's going to be one high, one low, and one in the middle. Which is perfect, because that's kind of what A24 is. A24 is kind of like the
All over the
Goldilocks
place.
situation of sometimes it's too hot, sometimes it's too cold, and what once in a while you'll find one that's just right. Yes, A24, the Goldilocks of production companies. But as we kind of wrap up here, I'll just add, well, no, we already asked that. I was going to say what we already know what your favorite A24 is, what is Dave's, but you already mentioned yours is X.
What
I
is
guess
your favorite A24 film, Chris?
it might be The Witch, ever since I watched it the other night. I can't think of one. I can't think of another one off the top of my head, but I watched it, and I was, it's that's why I feel weird praising The Witch and shitting on Hereditary, because they're like, you put them together, they're both slow, they both have to do with demons, and they both have to do with a family in shambles. So why would I say The Witch is great and Hereditary is, that's what I'm talking about. It's complicated. I
think the pacing of The Witch is better. And plus it's like a half hour shorter than Hereditary.
That's why A24 gives me a headache. Because I love them and hate them at the same time.
Yeah.
But I'd say that's a decent way to kind of like sum up our A24 talk. It's just all over the place.
Yeah.
But Ari, if you are listening, Davide has a script right here ready for you.
Make it to a movie, yeah.
And he's just been doing nothing but talk about how great Hereditary is, so you would be doing yourself a disservice to not have Hollow as your next big Shudder original.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But unless you guys have any like final thoughts on whether it be Hereditary or A24 in general, you want to give your final words, people?
I mean, my favorite scene of the movie,
mm-hmm.
outside of like the decapitation scene, which is like the most memorable.
Yeah,
I still think it has to be the husband getting caught on fire, because that one definitely caught me off guard.
Yeah, like you said, poor dude.
dude had it rough in this movie, but dude's, yeah, his sitting, death was not good.
Dude's been sitting back just watching his family slowly go down the toilet.
Yeah.
Definitely caught by surprise there. I agree. Yeah.
That's the other thing I'll just say in regards to like these stories is that it always just happens to a random family, which also makes it like oh my God, this could have just happened in my random family.
Yeah.
What if Meemaw is a cult leader?
Yeah.
If you're not going to say it, I'll say the memorable scene. My favorite scene is when she gets her head her block chopped off.
Yeah.
Because it wakes you up. If you're asleep during the movie, that'll be the scene that wakes you up.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I do love the way, like, how he reacts to it.
Oh,
he goes, we're okay. And then slowly drives home in complete shock.
That is what I would do, honestly.
I was like, oh, God.
Like, you have that mentality of, like, maybe if I don't look back and acknowledge what's behind
me. Maybe that didn't happen, yeah.
Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe she's just really quiet because I can always feign ignorance. Like, I didn't know. And
yeah, to me, I would say most memorable scenes are the ones of the mom finding Charlie in the car while the camera is on Peter. Yeah, and the second one would be the dinner scene. It's just incredible.
Just her having her mental breakdown.
Yeah.
She finally blames Peter for her.
So that's the one thing we'll all say. The movie definitely has its scenes and definitely is shot very well. So,
yeah.
But we're kind of wrapping up, getting close to the end of our hour here, unfortunately. Yeah. But Davide, thank you so much again for reaching out and coming back on.
No, it was a pleasure as usual, and thank you very much for having me. It's just a lot of fun to talk books and movies and all kind of spooky things with you guys. So really appreciate that.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely
appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll definitely talk to you afterwards and see if maybe we can. Maybe if I can buy a autograph copy, maybe we can get that going on for our next giveaway.
Absolutely. And please let me know what you think about Hollow. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts about it.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you what I think about Hereditary after I watch it a third time, too.
Yeah. Especially that.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on, Davide. And I'd like to thank all you guys for listening. I hope you all have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.